I'm going to have to slide out real quickly. I have a class that I'm teaching today on Saturdays, happen to come at the same time, and I will be returning a little later, but my outstanding art director members who are part of the committee will be here to take over for me, and I will return later. But welcome, and thank you so much for coming out here today. I think this is the very beginning of something worthwhile that we all can get a win-win out of and will be proud of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to join you in welcoming our panelists and thank them for their time this afternoon, and certainly join you in welcoming the members of the audience who have come out on a Saturday afternoon to share their views about police oversight of the BART Police Department with us. And we very much are interested in those views and want to take those into consideration as we proceed. You know, civilian oversight of the police department was something the BART board identified immediately after the shooting in January, and we determined that that was needed in order to ensure greater police accountability. The resolve of the board has only strengthened since that time, since we now have a consensus between the general manager, the chief of police, the president of the BART Police Officers Association, and the president of the BART Managers Association, that oversight of the BART Police Department is something that people are supportive of. Let me start by introducing Chief G. I don't see him at the moment. If he's not in the room, then I apologize for introducing him when he's not in the room. But let me move on to Greg Savage, who is the president of the BART Police Managers Association, and Jesse Seacon, who's the president of the BART Police Officers Association, who are both attending today because they've been working on this issue with the subcommittee. This is the first of two public forums that are planned to discuss the issue of police oversight. The second meeting is scheduled for Saturday, May 16th, where we'll discuss the advantages and disadvantages of the different oversight models, many of which we'll hear about today from this distinguished panel of experts who have joined us for this afternoon. If you've signed up to receive notice of future meetings and came in today, we will contact you directly with details about the May 16th meeting. The committee will take input during these two meetings to help inform ongoing public involvement through working sessions, and then we'll convene to discuss the purpose, goals, outcomes, and scope of the BART police oversight model. Committee plans to incorporate the input received from our independent internal affairs consultant and the consultant we have retained to conduct a comprehensive review of the BART Police Department. We'll also have workshops with the full board to further define the elements of a BART oversight model as the committee seeks board direction on a specific model to design for this district. And it is our hope as a committee and as a district that we can implement civilian oversight by October of this year, so we can have that in place as we move forward, as we work hard to restore the community's confidence in both the BART Police Department and the BART District. Let me turn for brief comments to Director Radulovich from San Francisco and Director Sweet from San Francisco. As soon as they're through, we'll go over to Amy for the beginning of the panel discussion.
Yes, just wanted to say thanks to everyone for coming out. I don't have a lot to add, but to say that I'm really glad we're having this meeting today. This is actually something that I've been wanting to do since I was elected to the BART Board 12 years ago. And so I'm glad we're having a discussion of setting up a civilian review body. I'm very glad that we're doing this with the full support of the BART organization, including the BART unions. I think that's maybe historic. That we've got the police unions on board in setting this up. And I've become convinced over the last few months that the force that the community wants the BART police to be is the force that the BART police want to be. So the question is just how do we get there? And I think this is certainly one of the tools that's going to get us there and keep us there. You know, policing, like everything else, is dynamic, and you know, you've always got to be adding and learning. And I think civilian review will be part of that question of how do we constantly learn how to be a better BART district and a better police force. So, and I just also wanted to thank our panelists. You know, giving up your Saturday afternoon to teach us about how this works in other cities in the Bay Area. So just a real wealth of invaluable advice and wisdom there on that panel. And thank you so much, and looking forward to the program.
Thank you. My name is Lynette Sweet, and I am a BART director and member of this committee as well. But I don't just represent San Francisco. I represent Alameda and Contra Costa counties. And I say that because I just got beat up this morning at a meeting in San Francisco because we're only holding meetings in Oakland surrounding this issue. But this is the right place to hold these meetings. Director Keller said something that I want to reiterate, and that is be very vocal today. If you hear something you like, say that. If you hear something you don't like, say that as well. Civilian oversight is only going to be as good as we all make it. And what Director Radulovich said is also true. Having our unions here working with us is very historic at BART. And we're looking forward to putting something together to make sure that the tragedy that happened on New Year's Day does not ever happen again here at BART. And I also want to make sure that folks know that we have hired an organization, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, to do a top-to-bottom review of the BART police force. They were hired just about a week and a half ago now, and I know members are here today, and... Sorry, did I say something?
No,
oh, okay. I just want to make sure that we all welcome them and give them as much information as possible. And I got an opportunity to meet some of the members here this morning, and I'd just like you all to stand so that folks will know who you are, what you stand for, and when questions are asked, we're going to be putting a lot of this back on what we get from you guys as well. So I'm looking forward to not just what we get out of today, and thank you, panelists, for being here today, but what we get from you all as well. So just welcome everyone, and hopefully this will be a very productive afternoon.
We'll turn it over to Amy to start the panel discussion. Thank you. And thank you both for those coming.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm Amy Allison, facilitating today. I really appreciate everyone coming out and participating in this very important process. I want to take a moment to talk about how the afternoon is going to go. We have from now until 5 o'clock for this important public meeting. So if you could, with me, open up your blue folder and pull out the agenda. We're going to hear from a very distinguished set of individuals who have expertise in cities around the Bay Area on models for police civilian oversight. They're going to each take a turn speaking from about 15 minutes each. And let me introduce everyone who will be speaking today, beginning here on my left, on your right, Andre Segura, who's an attorney with ACLU, Teresa Sparks, who's chair of the San Francisco Police Commission, Joe Marshall, vice chair of the Police Commission, Charles Gallen, who's the chief investigator of the Office of Citizen Complaints. Next, Don Casimir, who is a confidential investigative appeals officer with the city of Richmond. He also crafted the model in Sacramento. Kara Kapowski, a chairperson of the Oakland Citizen Police Review Board. Tina Allen, vice chairperson. And from the Berkeley Police Review Commission, William White, who's commissioner, and Victoria Irby, also commissioner. Thank you very much, everyone here. Could you give them all of your attention as we begin the process of them introducing the models? Before we, though, begin, I just wanted to give you just a few little housekeeping items. First of all, to respect the public space and the seriousness of the effort, if you would please turn your cell phones off or to silent. There's water and cookies over to the right, and the restrooms are outside of this room in the back. There's also an overflow room that you can also watch the proceedings. You will also see in your folder some additional information on the oversight models, as well as a list of websites that you can go to research additional information. You're going to hear a lot today in the first hour and a half on civilian oversight. You may have questions in your mind explaining a particular model or its application to the process that we're engaged with BAR today. In your packet, there are white cards, and if you don't have your own pen, we have one of those little baby pencils. You can write your questions on these cards as they come up. Make sure that if it's directed to a particular person, though, that you write who specifically should be answering that question. If you lift up the cards, there'll be someone from BART that will come along and collect it, and I'll gather them and, you know, collect, make sure that there's no duplicates, and then at the very end of the process where they've already, where they've presented their models, I'll ask the questions of the panelists directed to whoever the question was intended for, if you have that. In the agenda, after we have the presentations of the models, we'll have an opportunity to hear a presentation from the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement that Commissioner mentioned, Noble, and you can also direct questions to them on the white cards as well. At part two of the meeting will be an opportunity for you to share your thoughts about what model of police oversight you'd like to see BART adopt. So if you want to speak during that time, you can fill out a blue form, which is also in your packet and near the entrance. And I just wanted two things. One is that in order for everyone to have a chance to speak that wants to speak, we'll have 3 minutes for people to present. If there's a group, you know, and you can have up to 15 minutes as a group, but everyone must have a blue form so that we can make sure that everyone gets a chance to speak. I think that's it for the beginning. I don't want to delay anymore, and if everyone's good, let's begin with our first presenter, Andre Segura from the ACLU of Northern California.
So I'm just going to give a brief overview of Civilian Review Boards, a brief history, and what the ACLU feels are the elements that makes for an effective review board. At its most basic level, and I'm going to allow the folks here who do this for a living to describe that in more detail, but at its most basic level, a civilian review board is in place so that when there is evidence of police misconduct, for example, when a complaint is filed, individuals who are not sworn officers conduct a fact-finding investigation. They then produce a report based on their findings and give that report to a non-sworn officer or a board of non-sworn individuals who then makes a determination and a recommendation to the police chief. This practice basically grew out of widespread dissatisfaction with the way police departments were handling their internal review process. Citizens didn't believe that their complaints were being taken seriously. They felt that their complaints were being handled on a superficial basis. And the theory behind this movement is that when review happens by non-sworn officers, it's more independent, it's more credible. Now, starting with the Civilian Review Board in Berkeley in 73, this took on throughout the nation, and there are now, I think, approximately 12 review boards throughout California, but this is found within about 75% of the nation's largest cities, so this is something that's very common, very mainstream these days. Now, why are civilian review boards so important? The first thing is that it establishes a principle of police accountability. It encourages citizens to act on their grievances, and that is the most important part of civilian review board, is that it encourages the public to take an interest in their police department, in the public's business. Second, civilian review agency can be an important source of information about police misconduct. Civilian review boards often compile data and statistics which can allow the public to be aware if there are patterns of misconduct, far more than an internal affairs agency. It can also benefit police departments themselves. It can alert them two trends which chiefs may not be aware of if there isn't some type of outside observation of the practices. So this can provide an early warning system for police departments. Now, the ACLU believes that for an effective, fully empowered police board to operate, there needs to be about 10 elements. It has to have investigatory power, strong investigatory power, and it has to have an authority to independently investigate incidents and issue findings on complaints. It has to have mandatory police cooperation. It needs access to police witnesses, access to documents through a legal mandate, through a subpoena power. It needs the access to all the information necessary to make a finding, a credible finding. It needs to be funded, and it needs to be on the same level as an internal affairs agency. It needs to be a priority funding. It needs to be able to have hearings in order to resolve credibility issues within factual situations. Something that's also very important is that it needs to reflect the diversity of the community. The board and staff should be representative of the community that it serves. It also needs to be able to make policy recommendations and recommendations that the department must consider and consider seriously. As I said before, it can spot problems early on, and it can review policies that are in place. So it provides a great mechanism to make recommendations on existing and future policies. It also needs to be able to compile statistics and data. And it should be able to report publicly the trends that the board finds through the data. It should also just logistically be housed in a separate office away from police headquarters to maintain its independence and credibility with the public. And it should also have a role in the disciplinary measures that are taken, if any, from the findings that it makes. Its recommendations should be considered by the department in that. And lastly, but most importantly, it needs to be independent and it needs to be open. And I'll get to the issue of openness in a second. But it needs to have the power to conduct hearings on its own, to subpoena witnesses, and to report findings. Now, the openness is a little tricky, and I'm hoping that some of the other panelists can discuss this as well. But in 2006, as many of you know, the Supreme Court ruled in Copley Press that records and hearings that are part of these review boards are now closed off to the public. And the ACLU has always felt strongly that openness is the most important asset of a civilian review board. This just creates kind of an aura of secrecy, and the public isn't able to be fully aware of police misconduct that may be happening in its community. And with that, that's basically the overview that I want to give. I don't want to take away too much time from the folks that actually do this and can provide us insight onto how their models work and kind of, ways they can see that they could improve themselves or that BART can really develop an effective board for the future.
Thank you so much, Andre Segura. And those 10 points, there's probably more information on the ACLU website, which is listed, and we have links to it. And all of the commissions that are represented here on a piece of paper in this packet, so really appreciate your presentation. One thing I need to mention is some of our distinguished panelists have prior commitments and won't be able to stay for until 5, and we understand and just want to acknowledge in advance that that's the case with some of our panelists. Also, I want to tell you that if you didn't get every detail of the presentations, you can also access the video of these models as they're being presented on the website, on the BART website. So that's why it's being documented now. There'll also be a complete transcript available for later. Okay, now we go to our first conversation presenting an actual model of civilian oversight, and that's from San Francisco, beginning with the chair of the San Francisco Police Commission, Teresa Sparks.
Thank you very much. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity for San Francisco to present our model of civilian oversight of policing in San Francisco. The San Francisco Police Commission is a civilian oversight organization, which is an appointed body of civilians in San Francisco. Four members are appointed by the mayor, three members by the Board of Supervisors. It has broad authority to oversee not only civilian misconduct complaints, but also oversee the entire San Francisco Police Department, including the Chief of Police. The Chief of Police in San Francisco reports jointly to the San Francisco Police Commission and also to the Mayor of San Francisco. Discipline in San Francisco is handled by two separate organizations. One is the Offices of Civilian Complaint. The Offices of Civilian Complaint is a separate, independent civilian agency that reports directly to the San Francisco Police Commission. Offices of Civilian Complaint reports, just as the name would imply, it investigates all incidences of misconduct that are reported by civilians or citizens or individuals within the city and county of San Francisco. The second area of police oversight or investigation is conducted by what we refer to as the Management Control Division of the San Francisco Police Department, which is in other departments referred to as Internal Affairs. Mr. Charles Gallman is the chief investigator for the San Francisco Offices of Civilians Complaint, and he will give a more detailed overview of that agency and also of some of the procedures and policies within that agency. As far as we will also talk a little bit about the MCD division, number of investigators, what is comprised of, and some of the types of investigations that the MCD division does investigate. We'll also talk about a separate process within San Francisco, which is for officer-involved shootings and officer-involved discharges. An officer-involved shooting is an incident where San Francisco police officer discharges their weapon and actually strikes a human being, whether it's a fatal or non-fatal incident. An officer-involved discharge is when a San Francisco Police Department either intentionally or accidentally discharges their firearm and does not strike a human being. Those are separate investigations and actually have entire separate review boards that investigate those investigations. So with that, I'll turn it over just for a moment to Commissioner Marshall, who's the Vice President of the San Francisco Police Commission, and let him make a few opening comments.
So good afternoon. Just a few before we move on to Charles. The civilian oversight agency process in San Francisco is I just want to say this up front, it's not perfect. We continue to work at it to make it better. Actually, the whole process was, the new process was ushered in about, 7 years ago when Prop H was passed. They put a new commission in place. They increased the membership from 5 to 7. President Sparks and I have been, I guess, the longest tenure commissioners on it. We've been there. So there have been a number of things that we've been looking at to make the process better. What you're going to hear is we're not satisfied with it. So we're always trying to make it better. A couple of things that are going on right now, even as the OCC speaks, and you hear about that, there was an audit done by the Comptroller's Office in the Mayor's Office to strengthen it. That audit is available. The OCC, I think, is doing a great job in implementing the recommendations of the audit. But we're also, there are several studies going on in the police department, piece going on right now. The PERS study and other studies to try and make the department better. So even as you hear this model, understand that it is being worked on. We're trying to make it better. We do think that we're on top of things, though, constantly trying to do that. I want you to know that as we move forward. Let me just say the other thing about myself. Some of you may know that people actually know me more from Omega Voice Club and Street Soldiers. I do the radio show on Sunday nights. I have had brought Director Carol Ward Allen on to talk about what's happening here. Actually had John Burris on to give an update. We're monitoring this whole thing. So what I'm saying is that even though this room is small, we're committed to, on Sundays, getting this message out to the larger community as you move forward as far as civilian oversight is concerned.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Charles Gallman. I'm the Chief Investigator with the Office of Citizen Complaints. I've worked with the agency for the last 21 years. Started out as an investigator and have been a supervisor for the last 17 years. Chief Investigator for the last four. The mission of the Office of Citizen Complaints is to promptly, fairly, and impartially investigate complaints against San Francisco police officers and make policy recommendations concerning police practices. The agency came into existence in 1983 as a result of a charter amendment voted on by the citizens of San Francisco. They established the agency, and that initially, when the agency was established, it was underfunded. There were approximately six investigators, I believe. The man to my left was one of the early investigators. As Dr. Marshall said, the agency has changed. Some 6 years ago when the voters again went back and created language that required that there be one investigator per 150 sworn members of the San Francisco Police Department. Currently there are 2,386 San Francisco police officers, so if you do the math, that's 17 investigators. I supervise a team of 17 line investigators and three senior investigators. In the crowd is one of my senior investigators, Eric Balthazar. Stand up, please. And seated next to him is investigator Sherry Hall. She's one of our investigators. In order to work in our office, you cannot have been a member of the San Francisco Police Department. We do recruit investigators who have worked in law enforcement in other communities, some of whom have retired from other law enforcement agencies. We currently have investigators that one was with the DEA for 25 years, another was postal inspector. We have California Highway Patrol represented in our agency. Half of our investigators are attorneys. Others hold private investigator licenses. We have a very varied background in our office. We speak approximately seven different languages in our office. So we're in San Francisco to serve the community that is very diverse. Our job is to receive, investigate, and make findings on civilian complaints of on-duty misconduct by sworn members of the San Francisco Police Department. Where the OCC sustains one or more allegations against one or more officers in a given case, the case will be referred to the police chief or the police commission for discipline. The police chief can discipline an officer 10 days or less. Anything exceeding 10 days goes before the police commission, and these commissioners will hear that case. Consistent with the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, officers accused by complaints filed with the OCC receive notice of allegations against them, an opportunity to be heard by the OCC and to be represented by a union or a representative of their choice. Our interviews are compelled. An officer cannot refuse to come to one of our interviews. If I were to notice the chief of police for an interview, the chief of police shall come. They do not have a choice. Once we receive a complaint, investigate the complaint, we have to make a finding. The finding can be one of a number. The allegations could be determined to be proper conduct based on the rules that govern the police officers. Not sustained, which would mean that we could not prove or disprove the allegations happened the way the complainant or the officer said it did. If we sustain a complaint, then we write a report that is reviewed by management control on behalf of the chief of police. And again, if it discipline merits 10 days or less, that's the chief's discretion. Anything exceeding that goes before the police commission. The OCC performs four distinct functions. It investigates complaints and makes findings on those complaints. Second, it mediates complaints. The OCC has a mediation program that is probably one of the highest in the nation. Last year, we mediated 7% of our cases. We received, last year, 1,021 complaints. We do not solicit complaints. Complaints are generated by citizens filing complaints about misconduct that they believe that they were subjected to. We analyze police policies and practices, and we assist the department in changing the rules that currently are existent. We also perform a community outreach where we go out to the various communities and talk about our process and encourage folks who have been grieved by a police officer to come forward and file a complaint. You do not have to be a citizen to file a complaint. Anyone can file a complaint with our office. We are required by our city charter, which is our local law, to investigate all complaints that come to our attention. Oh. Okay. I will defer to my bosses.
Thank you, Charles. Just real quickly, the OCC investigated 1,021 complaints last year. The Internal Affairs, or MCD, of San Francisco Police Department investigated 241 complaints last year. So, there are a little over 1,200 complaints investigated. 1,000 complaints were registered by civilians. The balance were internal policy misconduct as determined by the San Francisco Police Department. Just for clarification, all policy of the San Francisco Police Department is determined by the San Francisco Police Commission. If either the department or the OCC recommends policy, it must be approved by the San Francisco Police Commission. In addition, as Charles says, all discipline over 10-day suspension is performed by individual and ultimately by the entire commission of the San Francisco Police Commission. So we hear individual hearings of individual instances of misconduct and have the authority to do anything from an 11-day suspension to discharge of the officer. We have a backlog right now of the San Francisco Police Commission of about 45 pending cases, and approximately between 1 and 2% of all misconduct cases that are filed with the OCC and the MCD are sustained and are brought to the San Francisco Police Commission. So of the 1,200, something between, 12 to 25 are brought to the San Francisco Police Commission per year. Also, we oversee, in addition to the San Francisco Police Department, the San Francisco Office of Citizens Complaints, we also oversee all, through a Firearm Discharge Review Board, oversee ultimate investigations of all officer-involved shootings and officer-involved discharge. Very quickly, when an officer is involved in a shooting in San Francisco, within 5 days, an independent board is convened, and it is determined whether or not the officer should or should not be returned to full duty. If the officer is returned to full duty, an investigation continues at that point, which is conducted by the San Francisco District Attorney, the San Francisco Police Commission, as through the OCC, the San Francisco SFPD through the MCD and Internal Affairs, and also the Homicide Division of the San Francisco Police Department. So after an officer-involved shooting, there are four independent investigations going on simultaneously. Within 30 days after an incident occurs, a Firearm Discharge Review Board is convened, which is comprised of individuals from within the department, representatives from the OCC, representatives from the San Francisco Police Department, and the San Francisco Chief of Police. At that point, it's determined whether or not the shooting was in policy or outside of policy, and if it's in policy, officers return to full duty. If it's outside of policy, the disciplinary charges are filed. That's a basic overview. Obviously, it's a very complicated structure in San Francisco, as are in other cities, and we'll be happy to continue to participate in these dialogue and these discussions as they go forward. Do you have something else you'd like to say, Dr. Marshall?
Again, with any of these systems, you should take a close look. Look at what's working, look at what's not working as well. I want to be candid about a couple of things that are, and I mentioned this before, problematic for us. Number one is, and she mentioned this early, a recent Supreme Court case in the the Copley case does not allow for disclosure of officers' names. So before, when we did a discipline hearing, it would be in public, it would be open, it would be televised, you would know who these officers are. That has completely changed. Anything related to personnel matters now have to be done closed session. Officer X, that is a big difference. And for someone who's getting into civilian oversight, you might want to know who these people are. That is no longer possible. Number two, even though we think we have a system the discipline system can also be very, very slow. In fact, if you talk to anybody in the department, they will tell you that one of their biggest problems is the system, because the chief can only recommend 10 days. Anything that's very serious tends to come to us, and then it gets into the legal system, the legal problem, and it goes back and forth. So oftentimes, it takes a long time to discharge cases. We think we've done a pretty good job, and when we came in, the backlog was interminable. We think we moved it forward. Those are a couple of the issues that we face in the civilian oversight process. Just want you to know that.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone from San Francisco, Commissioners Teresa Sparks, Joe Marshall, and Chief Investigator Charles Gallen. Really appreciate that. I want to also say that if you want to speak after the models are presented, the blue form in your folder, it's kind of first come, first serve, so fill those out. You can lift those up, and someone who's working the room will actually pick those up. Also, I've gotten my first question. If you have a question for any of the folks who are on our distinguished panel, indicate who I should ask the question to, write it down, hold it up, and someone will come by and make sure that we get that. Okay, let's move on to our next presentation. Don Casimir, who's a confidential investigative and appeals officer, is going to talk about beginning the City of Richmond and the City of Sacramento's models.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, folks.
Good afternoon.
Before I go any further, I'd like to just make a comment. Mr. Gallman said that when the OCC was started, and that was back in the early 80s, that it was insufficiently funded. Well, I'd just like to underscore that a couple of times. I remember when that office was first created, I was one of two senior investigators. We had a staff of 8 investigators and clerical support. And it was very difficult getting that office off the ground. So I commend the OCC folks for where they are today. Secondly, I'd like to call your attention to a piece that's in your packet. It is a roster of U.S. civilian oversight agencies. And I believe that's in everyone's packet, is it not?
Yes.
Okay, I would encourage you to take a look at that, and I would also suggest that you visit a website. There is a National Association of Civilian Oversight Professionals, folks that have been doing this business for years across this country. I was on the founding board of directors for that agency, and I must make a plug for them. Check them out at NACOLE.org, NACOLE.org. All kind of information about civilian oversight, including upcoming training conferences. I will say that it's been my privilege to be in civilian oversight for over 24 years. I was a police officer in Berkeley before that. I left the Berkeley Police Department, and I was affiliated with an international group of civilian oversight folks, of which I presided as president. When we started the Richmond Police Commission, that was after my tenure in San Francisco, it was in 1984. And I don't know if many of you recall what was going on in Richmond back in the early 80s, but it was not very pleasant in terms of police-community relationships in that city. So there were consent decrees, there were lawsuits, there was a new city manager, there was a new police chief, and there was the creation of the Richmond Police Commission. I was hired as the principal staff person to help to set that commission up. Richmond Police Commission, and I'll call your attention in your packet, is a police commission brochure. Okay, disregard the picture. Some of those commissioners have changed. It's not a very flattering picture, but I put it in there so that you would have information about the police commission so that you could refer to it during my presentation and later. The police commission consists of 9 members of the city of Richmond. They are appointed by the mayor and the city council. The police commission is a separate city department. It is completely independent of the police department. Now, in order to get on the commission, all the citizens have to do is apply and be a resident of the city of Richmond and be able to garner the mayor's nomination and the vote of a majority of the council, which is now, we just went from 9 to 7. So now it's you have to get at least 4 council members to vote for you. The purpose of the Richmond Police Commission is to advise the mayor, the city council, the city manager, and the police chief on all matters pertaining to the administration of the police department. And again, I'll underscore all matters pertaining to the administration of the PD. The Police Commission meets on the first Wednesday night of each month, and the meetings are, there's information on the brochure, it should be about the location, 330 25th Street in Richmond. Public meetings, open to the public. We do go into executive session when investigative reports are reviewed. They are not discussed in open session. There is an announcement made of the findings of complaints, but the complaints are not reviewed in open session. It's closed session. Officers are compelled to participate in the Police Commission investigative process. I, as the investigator and the person who interviews police officers, and I can say from the time I was there initially from 1984 to 1999, 100% compliance of police officers involved in the process. They're ordered by the police chief to participate. If an officer comes in and tends to be somewhat hesitant or evasive, it makes it real easy for the investigator, because basically you say you're ordered to be here by the police chief. Do you wish to comply with that order or not? If you do, let's begin the investigation. If you don't want to be here, you're free to leave. You just deal with your police chief on insubordination charges. The police commission has the authority to conduct independent investigation into complaints to deal with force or race. All other types of complaints are filed initially with the Internal Affairs Unit of the Police Department, and then the Police Commission has the authority to conduct investigations upon appeal of those other types of cases. So the investigation of complaints, independent investigation. The Commission is also charged with a review of Police Department policies, practices, and procedures. The Commission has the authority to recommend revision in policy, practice, procedure, recommend new policy, practice, procedure. I must say that, I'll back up just a sec, when we do complaint investigations, if the commission sustains an allegation of misconduct and the police chief does not go along with it, the matter then bounces up to the city manager. The city manager is the final source of appeal in terms of the commission's recommendation on citizen complaint dispositions. If the commission makes a policy recommendation to the police chief and the chief does not agree with that recommendation, that then is bumped up to the... It's my timekeeper. It's bumped up to the city manager. The city manager has the authority to review that. If the city manager decides to go along with the chief and not the commission, we bump the whole matter up to the city council. They are the ultimate policymakers in the city. They will make the final call on policy issues. And lastly, the commission is charged with recommending strategies to improve police-community relationships. And the bottom line of civilian oversight, and I don't care which agencies you look at on this roster, agencies across the country, or which agencies are represented at this table, basically all of these agencies are interested in enhancing the relationship between law enforcement folks and the citizens that they serve. And so that's kind of a common thread that runs through all this. So the review of police department policies and then the recommendation of strategies to improve police community relationships. The commissioners serve for 3-year terms. They can serve 3 consecutive 3-year terms, and then they have to step down, and then they're able to come back on board if they'd like to do that, and if they can garner the support of the city council. Now, why excessive force and unnecessary force and racially abusive treatment? Why those complaints for the commission to investigate? Well, it's very clear, as indicated before, the turmoil that existed prior to the creation of this commission was basically because of complaints of excessive and unnecessary force. A large number of the recipients of people that filed these complaints, that received these police services that they complained about, were black and brown folks. And so racially abusive treatment is something that the commission has first authority to investigate, and that is in the mind of the person who files the complaint. Okay. Somebody comes in and they feel there's a racial issue, then we say, fine, tell me what your racial issue is, let's hear it, let's talk about it, let's measure that up to existing police department policy and procedure, let's see if there is racially derogatory action that's there. The use of force. Back in that day, back in early 80s, there were at least three very prominent shootings in the city. Black males were shot, black males were killed and injured, guns were planted. There was a group of police officers known as the Cowboys who had established quite a reputation in the city of Richmond. And so those many procedures that I was telling you about were put into play to kind of stem that tide. And so that's basically why the commission was brought into being. How to file a complaint. The commission does not chase ambulances. The commission does not solicit complaints from citizens. The commission responds to citizens' complaints that are filed by citizens about Richmond police. That's what it's about. We take secondary complaints. If somebody sees something, and for example, I was looking out my window, I saw the officer stop this individual in the car, and they pulled him out of the car, and they jacked him up, put him on the ground, and that just wasn't right. Fine, would you like to file a complaint? Yes, I would. Well, you'll have to file a complaint. All complaints are required to be on a complaint form signed by a complainant. Okay? So the secondary complainant fills out the complaint form, signs the complaint. First order of business in the investigation is to contact the individual who was stopped by police. Talk to that person. Do you feel that this was excessive force, unnecessary force? If so, let's get a complaint form from you. Let's move forward in the investigation. Okay? And so that's the way the process has worked since 1984. There have been some minor revisions. The mayor and the city council, and there have been a number of mayors and city council members and police chiefs in the existence of the police commission, but the common thread is that the commission is still, in 2009, working to enhance the relationship between the police department and the community that it serves. Here's an added benefit. I talked about policy stuff. If the police chief in the city of Richmond has a policy matter that he wants to implement, a new policy, especially the current chief that we have now, Chief Magnus, has a real propensity to bring that policy matter to the police commission for public discussion. And community folks can come to that meeting, they can listen to the police chief give his report, they can talk about the new policy, they'll get a copy of it, and they can really have an impact on what kinds of policies are in place. Okay? Now remember, complaints deal with specific incidences of misconduct. Okay? Policy governs the behavior of all police officers in the department, all civilian employees. Right? You violate the policy, then there is a hook there, if there is misconduct, to deal with it to correct the problem. And that's what it's about, corrective action to take care of the problem. I know I have 5 minutes left, but I think I'm ending my discussion on Richmond at this point. And how do you want to handle Sacramento? You want me to keep going? I'll take a drink of water. Okay, I'm going to take my Richmond hat off, and I'm going to put on my City of Sacramento hat. I no longer work for the City of Sacramento, but in 1999, I left the City of Richmond to go to the City of Sacramento. I was hired by the city manager, then Mr. Bob Thomas at the time, to help to set up and create an Office of Police Accountability. And there were a number of complaints in the community by folks about the need for external controls of police. Right? Police officers and police agencies in the state of California are required to have an internal mechanism to handle citizens' complaints, internal affairs, professional standards units, etc. A lot of cities now are going to not only the internal control, which still exists, but external control. And in this case, in the city of Sacramento, it was the creation of the Office of Public Safety, or Police Safety, excuse me, the Office of Police Accountability. There is a brochure in your packet. My picture's on it, but I'm not there anymore. At the top of that, I put this in for your information, pulled it from my file, because it's a good picture. And the fact that it gives you some good information, okay? So the Office of Public Safety Accountability. It is an auditor-monitor style of civilian oversight. That is to say, the office works directly in the office of the city manager. I was a direct report to the city manager, and the office was charged with monitoring investigations conducted by the Internal Affairs Unit, It was charged with conducting independent investigations into police misconduct allegations. And what was who would determine which cases would be independently investigated? The director, in consultation with the city manager, in consultation with the city attorney. We talked about it, and authorization was given. In every case that I asked to do an independent investigation, that authority was granted. And so the auditing of internal affairs investigations, the conduct of independent investigations, and the monitoring of investigations by internal affairs as they go on. That is to say, a citizen files a complaint with internal affairs. Citizen says, I don't feel comfortable talking to those cops in the police station, okay, by myself. I don't want to go out. Would you go with me? Sure, I'll go with you. I'll sit there. I'll monitor the interviews. I'll make sure that the questions that should be asked are asked. And I'll make sure the process goes as it is. Now, there are some folks, and there are probably some in Oakland and in all the jurisdictions that BART serves, that are not comfortable filing a complaint about the police with the police. And so the OPSA was established to be a independent office which could receive citizen complaints and get them into the process. So the OPSA produces an annual report, and I'm not going to read all this stuff. It's on the back of this brochure, so be sure to check that out. But an annual report is produced and presented to the mayor and the city council. And the thing I really enjoyed about those meetings is that myself and my boss, the city manager, would walk into a packed council chamber and we would present the annual report, and on the front row of that conference room would be the police chief, the deputy chief, the internal affairs for commanders, the professional standards folks, and we would go through a litany of what's going on with complaints in this town. How come we have a rise in complaints with officers from 1 to 5 years? That was the issue when I was there. 1 to 5 year group is getting the lion's share of the complaints. So those annual reports are presented in public meeting, and there's a transparency piece here, so that folks can talk about the level of accountability of police in Sacramento. Now, it got so good in Sacramento, and I'm pleased to be a part of that, and I really enjoyed my work there. I was there for 6 years, that the city manager convinced the mayor and the city council to increase the scope of authority to include the fire department. So we set up a fire department internal affairs unit, and we monitored internal affairs investigations for the fire department. And it was a challenge setting that internal affairs piece up. Now, there are some differences. I mean, I talked to you about Richmond, the Police Review Commission. I'm talking to you now about an auditor-monitor style of oversight. And one of the big issues when you work for a city manager, and I'm sure it's the same in this town, you work for a city manager, and the manager runs the city. And in this case, the BART general manager with her board, they run the BART agency. And so if there was ever a problem with getting an internal affairs report, or if there's ever a problem with me not getting what I felt I needed from the police chief, I'd simply call the city manager. He didn't like to get late night calls, but I didn't mind calling him and say, hey boss, here's what we need, and we'd get it. Another key part to the Office of Public Safety Accountability is if there is a critical incident, an officer-involved shooting, a death in custody, there is a critical incident response team. The Office of Public Safety Accountability, which includes now police and fire, responded as a member of that critical incident call-out team to the scene of the incident. If there is an officer-involved shooting, within a matter of minutes, if you will, once the police chief is notified and gets his notification, there's a protocol list, I received a phone call, and it was time to roll to the scene of the incident to monitor the initial investigation, then to sit in on the interviews with the involved officers, not to conduct the interviews, but to monitor and have the authority to ask questions pertaining to specific matters regarding critical incidents. That is an important piece because it allows another set of eyeballs to be on the police. I'm a former police officer for 12 years. I'm a civilian oversight professional for 24 years. I'll stand here and tell you that every law enforcement agency that exists needs to have some kind of civilian oversight, okay? And you can talk about having either a monitor, an auditor, a police review board, an ombudsman set up, or any of the other variations, 1 minute, any of the other variations on this list, and something can be crafted that can be unique to the city, to BART, the BART organization, and the police officers that serve BART, and it serves you, the people in this community. So that's my presentation. I'm pleased to be here to be part of this, and I look forward to responding to your questions later in the program. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Now we've heard from San Francisco, and we've heard from the models in Richmond and Sacramento. Now it's time to move to Oakland. The Oakland Citizen Police Review Board has two representatives. The chairperson of the commission, Kara Kapowski, can begin.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us. This is Tina Ellen, the vice chair. We're both commissioners on the Oakland Citizens Police Review Board. Sadly, our staff and our investigators were not able to be here. So we're basically, CPRB started in 1980, and over time, Oakland City Council has increased its jurisdiction. As of 2007, CPRB is comprised of a volunteer board of citizens who are appointed by the mayor. And they apply, go through an interview process. Then they go before the Oakland City Council for approval. Right now, we consist of 9 standing members. Optimally, we're empty of about 2 or 3 positions at this time, and 3 alternates. We haven't had a full board in many years. We're having issues getting that filled. The requirement for all CPRB commissioners is, one, we have to attend Oakland Citizens Police Academy, which is a 14 Saturdays, 3 hours each day, to go through with the officers exactly the different facets and departments of the OPD. We also are required to go on police ride-alongs to see exactly what the police experience during their normal duties. The composition of the CPRB staff is that we have a hearing officer, a lawyer, who oversees all hearings. We have an executive director, a policy analyst, investigators, and support staff. Sadly, right now, because of Oakland budget problems, the city ordinance actually calls for 1 investigator per 100 officers. At this time, Oakland has 803 officers. That would infer 8 investigators. We have 2. They each have a caseload between 30 and 40 cases at this time and are really overworked. I also believe that many of the support staff has been laid off. So my main recommendation would be to make sure that any future oversight committee is fully staffed and funded in order for them to do their job. Our complaint process is that anybody can file a complaint. Again, you don't have to be a citizen. We have jurisdiction in Oakland over the OPD sworn officers and park rangers. The complaint resolution options that we have available are a hearing, administrative closure, mediation, informal resolution, and staff recommendation to the city administrator. We also make policy recommendations to the OPD with regarding safety issues and behavior. We also do a lot of community outreach to the various cultures in Oakland for citizen and community education so that they know that we're there. A lot of people in Oakland particularly are not aware that there is even a CPRB. I don't know why that is. There seems to be a conspiracy against it. I've talked to many press and mentioned the fact that CPRB is there. They're not interested in even putting the word out there. So it's good for the public to be aware that there are organizations like CPRB, and I hope that more awareness comes out of this. We are advisory to the city administrator with regard to our findings, and we are separate from the OPD and the internal affairs with regard to our investigations. Once a complaint is filed, we do have access to the internal affairs folders and investigation, but our investigators conduct a separate independent investigation on their own. And with regard to Copley Press, we are sadly in closed session for all hearings. But we do feel that the way that our hearings are conducted at this point is very equitable. We don't give any benefits to one side as far as the investigation, hearing, and cross-examining the witnesses or the police officers. Nobody is allowed to cross-examine each other. It's just straight on both. That's basically my report.
Can I just say CPRB?
There's a lot of CPRB is Citizens Police Review Board.
Okay, Tina Allen.
And, basically, I'm just going to reiterate what Kara's just said. I think our concern is that we don't have a lot of people coming out after, you know, trying to apply for the board, and we really want to encourage that so that our board is more diversified. As you mentioned before, we do have a few openings on the board at this moment, and we are actively trying to do a lot of outreach in the community. In the past, we've worked in the Fruitvale area as well as in Chinatown, and recently we had a outreach at Laney College. So we are actively trying to get out in the community and get the word out and get people involved and get people to understand what's going on in Oakland. And we truly do encourage people to apply for the Citizens Police Academy, which is a 14-week academy in Oakland. And I can't stress how great this academy is, because once you get in there, you get to learn about procedures, you get to learn about structure, you get to learn about the police officers, how they function, how they think and what they do, and it's specifically geared towards citizens so that they can understand their rights when they're out in the community, and they can explain to, say, other their co-workers and their family members as to what is the process and what's going on in Oakland, and also start to participate in community policing, which is very important. So I just want to say that.
I'm sure we'll have more questions. There's a lot of questions, and I want to remind everyone in the audience, as we hear these excellent presentations, to write questions down and hold them up, and we'll make sure that in the next session, right after we hear from the Berkeley Police Review Commission, we have an opportunity to hear and have our panelists respond to questions. Okay, William White, Commissioner of the Berkeley Police Review Commission, you're on.
Hey, thank you. I'd like to thank each and every one of you come out today, and it's really heartfelt that you have this concern in terms of civilian oversight. Berkeley is where it all happened. It had started back in the 30s. Over 30 years ago. We were the premier agency that created the police oversight. Civilian police oversight. I am a commissioner. I'm a three-time past commission chair. I would just like to talk about who we are and how we got to where we are. Basically, over the years, the commission has been made up of attorneys, teachers, administrators, retired people, and students. We are appointed by the city council members, and we have a two-year term that we serve. We conduct our meetings bi-monthly. These are public meetings, and then we also have our closed hearings because of Oakley, and we give recommendations for policy changes within the police department. Over the years that I have served, under three different police chiefs, and just recently our chief Hamilton has announced his retirement, so there will be another chief who will be coming in. We participate in the hiring process of the chief, and which is something that I feel is very important. Also, I think Don mentioned that we do have an interaction with, on a national basis, through NACO, which is the National Police Civilian Oversight, but there's also a Bay Area Police Oversight Network that we also belong to, which is called BAPON. BAPON is not very active at this moment, but at some point we hope to make it stronger, and so we can, as agencies, know what is happening with it and discuss the problems within the agencies we have. At this point, I'm going to turn over to our Chief Investigative Officer, Victoria Irby, and she will give a presentation of the model that we work under.
Good afternoon, BART directors, fellow panel members and members of the community. My name is Victoria Irby. I'm the director of the Berkeley Police Review Commission. I just want to start out by saying that there are handouts regarding Berkeley's model in the back, so on your way out, you can grab this handout. As Commissioner White stated, Berkeley has been around since 1973. We are one of the oldest agencies in the country. In fact, in the 60s, Martin Luther King advocated for civilian oversight of police. So this is really long overdue for this community. Now, I want to commend all of you for being here today because without the community, civilian oversight agencies would never have existed. They do start in communities with the active participation, community organizers, and the voice of the community. So thank you for being here today. I want to start out by saying that Berkeley has 9 commissioners. They're all appointed by the city council and the mayor. There's 1 director, 1 investigator, and 2 support staff. The mission of the office is to increase public confidence in the police. We also improve the police training and policies. We increase professionalism among police officers, and we increase public confidence. But I think the most important thing about civilian oversight that the BART board directors should consider when hiring staff is that the staff needs to be objective, fair, and neutral. The investigations, in order to gain the credibility from the police department, the investigators need to be credible. At the same time, they need the community participation. So that is really critical. And one of the reasons why Berkeley Police Review Commission is quite successful is we do have an excellent relationship with the Berkeley Police. I have trained their entire staff, and that has been the first time in Berkeley's PRC history that staff has ever trained the entire police department on civilian oversight of police. We conduct independent investigations. So on the second page of my handout, I actually have a flow chart of how our investigations work. There are 200 officers in Berkeley. We hold 2 public commission meetings every month on the second and Wednesdays of the month. The public is more than welcome to come to these meetings. And if you come to these meetings, you might see the chief there. He attends about 95% of our meetings, and the public is allowed to ask him questions about what's going on with the police. And I think that's testament to the great relationship that the commission has with the police department. So let's say you come into our office and you want to file a complaint. We get complaints from people of all ages and people of all races. We'll get a 16-year-old who comes in and says, you know, this cop came up to me and thought I was a prostitute, and that was really rude. We recently held a closed hearing on the Anita Gay shooting that occurred February last year, where Anita Gay was shot and killed by Berkeley police. I cannot reveal what happened in that hearing because of Copley Press, but Berkeley was the only city in California who appealed the closed hearing California Supreme Court decision and paid $500,000. Didn't win, but we're holding closed hearings, and the people that are listening to these hearings are civilians. They are appointed by city council, so they did get to make findings from these hearings, and the result is that the findings go to the police department and the city manager, the chief, and the city council. So you come into our office, you file a complaint. We will interview you on the tape, and we will conduct a full-blown investigation. We take all complaints seriously. Some of the complaints might be use of force, discourtesy, the officer was rude. I was watching a homeless person getting arrested, and the officer violated my right to watch that arrest. Officer just stopped me on the street for no reason. Because I wear a big jacket and baggy pants. So we take all complaints very seriously. When you come in and you file the complaint, Internal Affairs will also conduct a concurrent investigation. That investigation is also confidential. We don't share our investigative findings with Internal Affairs, but they will do their own investigation. Once we interview the police officer, we'll interview all civilian witnesses. You know, a homeless person will come in. We're really good about looking for homeless people on the street if they disappear. We've got our investigative techniques. Once we're done investigating the entire complaint, we look at the medical records, the police reports, we'll analyze maps, locations. Then we will write a report. The report goes to a 3-member panel, and the panel acts as the jury. So we'll hold what's called a Board of Inquiry hearing, and the 3 commissioners will question the complainant, any witnesses, and the police officer. And the officer will usually bring in his representative, usually a police union person, and it's kind of like a mini trial. They present evidence, they do closing arguments. But the beauty of this process is that it's free to the public. And, you know, the complainant does not need to hire an attorney to do this. And my job in these hearings is to make sure that it's fair for both parties. Once the commission comes up with findings, the findings report goes to the chief of police, it goes to the city manager, and they consider whether to discipline the officer. So that's kind of our process in a nutshell. I also have more details about the investigation process on page 3 of my handout. I also have information about the step-by-step process of the closed hearings. And one thing that's really unique in Berkeley that I am very proud of as the director is we have also a series of policy subcommittees that are open to the community, and the chief always sends a captain or a member of the police department to attend these policy subcommittees. In my handout on the last page is a list of these subcommittees, one of which, one of the recent issues is parole searches and how they affect third parties. So a lot of our complaints recently have been a pattern of grandparents and parents who come to the PRC and they say, you know, my son or my daughter lives at home with me, and all of a sudden police came into my house and knocked our door down and searched the house. And, you know, I've been living in Berkeley for 50 years. I've never had any problems with police. Well, if you've got a parolee who lives with you, your house might be subject to a search. So that's what the subcommittee is now looking at, whether what police should be doing around that, what is the actual policy, how could we improve the police and community relations around these parole searches, and how do they affect the moms and the grandparents and people whose houses are being searched. We also have the officer-involved shooting subcommittee, which came out of that Anita Gay shooting, and one of the most critical subcommittees that we've had was the evidence theft, where in 2006, a sergeant who had been on the police force for 20 years stole methamphetamine and drugs and heroin out of the property room. Unfortunately, Berkeley has a really good reputation. Our officers are top-notch. They're very well educated. But, you know, when there's one bad apple, it tends to affect the trust from the community to the police department, and that's extremely unfortunate. So the subcommittee got together, they worked with the community, they worked with members of Cop Watch, and we came up with 28 recommendations on how to improve narcotics and asset seized during drug raids to come into the police department. The police department agreed with 25 out of the 28 recommendations, so I find that highly successful. So there's a list of policy subcommittees in the packet, and I'm open for questions, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I have
First of all, thank you to all of our panelists for sharing the models and your individual experience in civilian oversight in your cities and counties. I have some excellent questions for the panelists, and let me just say before I ask questions, everyone on the panel does not have to respond to every single one. Use your discretion to make sure that the question's answered, but we also have some really excellent questions, and I want to begin with this one. This question is, I want to ask Andres Segura from the ACLU this one. What's the essential difference between the auditor, commission, and investigative forms of oversight, and what are the strengths and weaknesses of those forms?
I'm actually going to punt this one to people who are more experienced in how these actually operate in practice.
Don Casimir, you want to try that one?
No. I'll try.
Okay, wait a minute, Victoria Irby, she's at the end. Please.
No, let me just try to answer
right.
That. You know, I think that there are advantages and disadvantages to all models. I think that it's important to look at the strengths, the elements of successful oversight agencies, and there's a piece in your folder about that. And whether you're talking about the auditor or the monitor or the board, police review board, whatever you're talking about, they have to have these essential elements. A strength of the police review commission is that it involves citizens in the process. And in some communities, that's very important. In the city of Richmond, in the city of Berkeley, and the city of Oakland, it is a strength to have citizens involved in the process. The auditor-monitor style, in my opinion, seems to be more streamlined, if you will, and it involves a lesser staff, a ability to kind of streamline the process and not involve in continued dialogue and debate. And that happens sometimes in a police commission or a police review board meeting. So there are advantages to either. But as long as you have the authority to get all the records you need from the police department, as long as you have the authority to compel officer testimony, and you have a transparency where you can report out or have a citizen involvement piece, I think that any of these types of systems can be effective as long as you have those elements, those key elements in place.
Okay, thank you. And I have another question that dovetails, and I'll ask you, Victoria, to take an attempt to answer this one. All of these models that have been presented sound very good, but how is it actually working in practice? What are your concrete results on how many officers have had consequences for their conduct, given your models?
That's a very good question. In Berkeley, since we've started since 1973, it's been kind of a hit and miss process. And the reason why I say that is ever since we've started, the police association has been suing the PRC and the city, and the city has paid a lot of money to get to where we're at today. So before 2007, when the California Court of Appeal finally ruled that our hearings need to be closed to the public, we were not supposed to be a part of the disciplinary process. We were just supposed to have open hearings, and the police could come, the public could be there, the media could be there, and they can see this exchange between the problem with the complaint and the complainant. But we couldn't ever recommend discipline to the police department. Now, when I worked in Oakland, I used to be an investigator in Oakland. I actually sat in meetings with internal affairs and the city administrator at the time and my director, and we actually recommended discipline on police officers. But the beauty in Berkeley was that even though the hearings are now closed, we can recommend discipline. The officers do not like coming to interviews. They don't like having to answer questions from a civilian. They don't like being interrogated about their actions when they are ordered to come to these interviews. So, you know, on one hand, they have to come to interviews. On the second hand, they have to come to a hearing. And you've got these three civilian commissioners asking them questions about their actions. They don't like that. And so just that alone, we believe, deters behavior. Our questions also are very educational for the officers. They get to hear the other side. They get to read the complainant's testimony and see how the complainant felt about the entire incident. And the chief even said during the middle of our lawsuit that our hearings are very educational for the police officers. So there are some benefits, but depending on the model, depending what city you're with, some cities impose discipline and their oversight agencies are a big part of that, and some are not.
So let me pick up on the discipline part and turn to the city and county of San Francisco. There's a question here for Commissioner Teresa Sparks. In the San Francisco model, officers are compelled to appear, as you and your team have said, to appear before the commission. What actions are made against the officers who refuse to appear? And once appearing, if an officer evokes his right not to speak, what actions are taken?
Thank you for the question. In San Francisco, just to quickly talk about the question right before, is we've disciplined usually between 25 and 30 officers per year. And in those discipline cases, the only appeal in the city and county of San Francisco is the California Superior Court. There is no appeal process within San Francisco for discipline in San Francisco. The Board of Supervisors, the mayor, the chief of police are no appeal body for all discipline administered by the commission. Would you also repeat that question real quickly?
Sure. Essentially the question is, in your model, officers are compelled to appear, so what happens if they don't? And what happens if they evoke the right not to speak? And so generally there's a question about general accountability in your process and your model.
If an officer is compelled to appear, as also the Office of Citizens Complaint also has subpoena power and can compel witnesses to appear as well. If an officer chooses not to appear, then they can be fired for that infraction. Very simply, they can be discharged, and there have been cases that they have been fired for failure to appear. As far as the right to speak in San Francisco, anyone who is an accused has a right not to speak in their own hearing. It's certainly their lawyer or their advocate's opinion or recommendation whether they should or should not speak. There is no repercussion if an officer chooses not to speak, but the hearing does proceed even if they do not choose to speak, and the commission makes a judgment based on the evidence as presented. It runs very similar to any other hearing or court case.
And let me just stay with you, Commissioner, for a moment. What do the details of the discharge of an officer entail? Does the officer have a record as a result of a fatal discharge of a weapon? Does the officer receive benefits in your model?
When an officer is fired, they do not receive the benefits going forward. And what we find is, even though we've fired very few officers in the last several years, Commissioner Marshall and I have been on the commission for 5 years, what we find is 5 p.m. before the beginning of the hearing, we have a number of officers that retire. Once they retire, they're no longer within the jurisdiction of the commission, and so they will have benefits. And so what we have seen is officers have retired before those commission charges actually are heard. As far as officer-involved shootings, that process is no different than any other process in discipline. The case is reviewed. We see whether or not there's A, guilt, B, a policy breach, or C, any other misconduct, and we try that hearing same as any other misconduct.
Okay. Specific function is police administration and oversight. Would your model work, or would it be trusted if everything occurred under the auspices of a city manager? And some of you have spoken about that today. And insulated from the public?
In San Francisco, the chief is joint jurisdiction between the mayor and the police commission. Either one of us can fire the chief without consulting the other. But let me just say, we're searching for a new police chief in San Francisco, and among the many recommendations of the studies that, first of all, the chief is going to be selected differently. This is the first time that the chief in San Francisco will not be appointed. Well, and I'm sorry, the selection process will come through the commission. We will recommend three names to the mayor. He can only pick one of the people that we recommend. That's very different. That's never happened before that. But the other recommendation was that the new chief have a contract, a 5-year contract, which would take the politics out of the process. In other words, the person would not be beholden to the political whims of the mayor. That's the hope, and this is something that we're looking at very hard, and that the chief would have his or her own contract, which would try to get them away from the politics of the whole thing. So because that's a very recent recommendation for us that we're looking into, I would think that's something that anybody would want to look at.
And just real quickly, in San Francisco, the chief of police, as Commissioner Marshall said, reports shortly to the commission and to the mayor. But we have the ability, investigatory ability, to question and call on any member of the command staff. And the chief and the entire command staff, all deputy chiefs, all commanders, and a relatively high number of captains attend every one of our meetings from beginning to end. And every one of our meetings is a public meeting. So I think in this particular case, at the very minimum, it would be a good idea to have joint reporting of a chief of police of BART to a civilian oversight group, particularly an elected body such as the BART board and the general manager, such that either could discharge that individual unilaterally. That way it gives the civilians through the electorate an ability to have some control over the chief of police.
Good afternoon. There you go. My name is Joseph McMillan, and I have the pleasure of serving as the national president for the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. As been stated by Ms. Allison and others, we've been retained by BART to conduct a comprehensive study of the policies, policings, of the police department itself. And that will be a top-to-bottom review of training, recruiting, hiring, with regard to the entire gamut. With me today is Mr. Jesse Lee, who is our executive director, as well as Mr. Patrick Oliver, who will be leading the team of personnel that we will have that will come to the city to conduct a review that BART has retained us to do. That review we anticipate taking approximately 4 months in total duration, and that's in the time that we hit the ground to actually providing a report back of our findings with regards to it. So I'm going to ask Chief Oliver to come up very briefly and just to explain the tentacles of how we anticipate conducting this review and the things of this necessary.
Once again, my name is Patrick Oliver. I will be the review team leader for the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. We welcome all of you to this community forum on civilian oversight. That review, as our national president said, will take about 4 months. We will have about 16 members conducting this review. We will review the operations and administration of the BART Police Department. Some of the key areas that we'll be reviewing will be the culture of the department, training, equipment, facilities, policies, procedures, tactics. Those tactics are going to be use of force, internal affairs, discipline, community confidence, communication, and etc. We will be responding specifically to the request for proposal submitted by BART in our management audit of the police department. All of the recommendations that will be made will be based on 5 objective criteria. Those criteria will be international law enforcement standards. It will be or a legal mandate, criminal justice research, a law enforcement best practice, or an analysis that we conduct ourselves. Key, I think, issues related to this study is first and foremost, it will be objective in that all of our team members will not be from this community, and we'll be taking an objective look at BART. Also, all of us are subject matter experts or law enforcement practitioners. Prior to myself being in academe, I had a 27-year career in law enforcement, worked for 5 law enforcement agencies, and was chief of 4, all in the state of Ohio. It will be interactive with all BART staff. We want their input and feedback on the quality of, and scope of police services. Also, it will have a community focus. The community will have an opportunity also for input and feedback into the study. So that
questions. My first question is, since the murder of my son, how much training has the officers went through since he was killed?
Good question.
You know, I know I'm not going to be able to answer that right now, but I know we can get somebody back to you with that information. And it's not meant to be a put-off, it's just that I couldn't answer honestly how much additional training has been given. I know we've done some things to try to make sure that that never happens again, but so far as what they've gone through, we've sent some of our officers out to do training in excessive force and getting some backup in how they're doing it. But
I'm just kind of baffled that...
Ms. Johnson, over here in front of you, sorry. I think that question should be put on our chart for follow-up, because we want to be responsive. We may not be able to be as forthcoming today as we would like to be because the information isn't here. But we definitely want to be forthcoming and be responsive. And as Director Radulovich has just pointed out to me, at our next police review committee meeting, there is an item on training on that agenda. So we are focused on that as well.
Okay, I'm just kind of baffled because when an incident occurs, such as what has happened with my son, there should have been some immediate training.
That's right.
I'm a manager at my job, and when there is an accident, if a person falls off a ladder, we go through immediate training with our employees. And so to say that you have to put it off, you're the board. You should know what has transpired, training, or what has occurred since the death of my son. This has been since January 1st. You guys should have come up with some kind of plan to train these officers, these other officers, so that this situation does not happen again. This is showing a lack of concern. This is a lack of concern. The public needs to know that. I mean, obviously, the board is not caring, or the police commission for BART is not caring. If you guys don't have some statistical figures in front of you right here today, you should have those figures. You should know that we did immediate training right after the incident occurred. You should know that, yes, we have talked to the people on the officers on the platform. We have talked to all our officers. We are working with them to ensure that this does not occur again. And from your responses, I see a lack. A real lack of concern for your public safety, of your people who ride BART. And that's unacceptable. Something has to be done. I can't believe that. I cannot believe that no action, or you don't know the action, or you're working on taking action has been done. That's unacceptable. That is unacceptable. Soon as an incident occurs, you should be on the job. The board, the police should be on the job to ensure that this type of incident does not occur again. And right now what you're saying is you guys are giving an option for this type of incident to occur again because you're not doing the proper training.
Yes.
You're not taking the proper steps to ensure that this does not happen again.
Right.
So my next question is, what are you going to do to ensure that this does not happen again?
Right.
Yeah. Well.
Let me try. First of all, training was one of the things that jumped to my mind immediately after this happened. And I've been the one that's asking. First of all, I asked for a review of how much are we budgeting for training. We're right now in the middle of budget. There's been a desire to wait till the Noble study's done. I don't think we can wait till the Noble study's done. We need to make sure that we're putting the money and the resources into training right now. I've asked for that. It has not been scheduled. It's pissing me off, frankly, that it hasn't been scheduled, that there hasn't been a public vetting of it. Second thing I've asked to see, their training plan. Police have shown me a training plan. We should make it available publicly. It's not where I want it to be, but it has been certainly a focus of mine. It's been the thing that I have been asking the police to do because I know it's important. And in terms of what are we doing to make sure that this never happens again, well, frankly, this is one part of it. We need to set up civilian review so that we don't, until we keep current, and both with the policy recommendations coming out of, you know, looking at practices and saying, okay, what are we doing wrong? Being proactive about it also. You know, we need an internal process to investigate incidents like what happened to your son, because I think that our internal process that did exist let everybody down. There was no confidence in it. So that's why what's happening here today is very important to me. I think bringing Noble in is another piece of trying to make sure that this never happens again. We need that soup to nuts review of everything that's going on at BART, in training and in personnel and in hiring and in policies from that outside expert. It's taken a while to get us this, but we're going to get it. And then I think as Commissioner Sparks was telling, then out of that comes a work plan. Once we have that report, we can say, all right, general manager, police chief, here's, you know, 100, 1,000, 10,000 recommendations. We're going to go through recommendation by recommendation, make sure everything gets done. We're not experts in policing. That's totally obvious, right? I mean, it's not a requirement to be BART director. We're just elected officials. But I think we're all trying to scramble. We're all trying to do everything we can, A, to figure out how our BART police force is working today. I think we're doing everything we can to figure out how it ought to be working. And this conversation today is part of it. And, you know, so, yeah, I know that the district's response to date has disappointed. You know, I get to tell you, I told you so, because I'm one of the folks who has been continuously saying we need more openness, we need more transparency, we need civilian review. For whatever reason, that has never happened here. It's going to happen this year. I'm sorry, frankly, that it took the death of your son to make this happen. But it's going to happen. You got my word.
So you spoke on your budget, but you're still hiring different teams to come in to look at your policies and to give you recommendations. Mm-hmm. So then that is saying to me that you really haven't done any training for the officers, and so that you value having these outside investigation teams come in, which I have no disrespect to the outside investigation teams, but you value spending money on them coming in, but yet you don't value the lives of human beings riding on BART because you have not had had the training set up for these officers in event what to do if a situation occurs like it did, how to not have the force used that was used. And that to me seems like you're saying, okay, well, we have all this money we're going to spend on that, but we're not going to worry about the people that's riding BART, and that's unacceptable.
That's not true. We've actually checked and we've made sure, and the BART officers are getting all of the training that's required for every police officer in the state. They're getting that training. But that training's not enough, I think, in the minds of all of us. We need to go further. So that's what we're trying to do is look to other police departments. Who's doing more than the minimum? Because I think it's the result of myself and I would say my colleagues here. We don't need to do what's just required. We want to be the best. And if there's anything that we can do in the area of training, above and beyond what is minimally required, that would prevent, frankly, things that, like what happened to your son, that's what happened to other people here. If we can do anything in the realm of training that's going to prevent other deaths, then we'll do it. We just need to know what it is we need to do. And it's beyond the minimum. But just to reassure you, the minimum training, that's something that's done here. I mean, all of our officers receive all the same training that any police officer in California does. And the department has a program where there, you know, should be at least, giving everybody what's required. I think the issue is we need to go beyond what's required.
Okay, so how much training then have they had from since January 1st of this year because of what has happened? How much training have your officers had?
I don't know the answer to that. The chief would know the answer to that.
Okay.
Yes. Where the chief is, I don't know.
Officers here, but nobody else.
Well, is there an officer here that has that information?
Yeah.
Because that's important. That's a very important question.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'd ask the general manager maybe to answer that since she's the chief's boss.
Okay.
I am not able to tell you today the number of hours of training that have been delivered since January. I will say in general, in the training, hours of training that are provided to the police department for in-service training, last year exceeded the minimum, as Director Radulovich has indicated, and our budget going forward for the coming year increases both the hours of training as well as focusing on some specific areas of training this year, but I cannot give you, sitting here today, an exact number of hours that have been delivered since January. We can certainly provide that information.
So what has your recommendation of training been for the officers, since you're over the officers, since January 1st of 2009? How much training have you requested that they go through?
I've requested that we increase training. I am not, as general manager, I am not the expert in any number of areas that are critical to the performance of this organization.
Wow.
Wait.
How'd you get the job?
I disagree with you. I think my job is to manage, to not to be the expert in engineering, in all safety issues, in all human resources issues, benefit issues. That is why we have a staff of professionals who are experts in their area, who I rely on.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, let me intervene a bit here, if I could. Ms. Johnson, we want to be very respectful to your questioning. The purpose of the questions that are being asked for us to come forward is to talk about civilian oversight. It is one of the ways that we will, as a district, one of the many ways as a district that we will respond to what happened on January 1st. So there are people who are waiting here to give us their feedback on the panel, on the discussion that occurred, their point of view about how we can best set up the civilian oversight. We are obviously not prepared today to answer specific questions about specific details. If you have those questions, I assure you that if you let us know what they are, we will do what we can to provide you with that information. But I would like to try to move on, and certainly would welcome your opinion and point of view about civilian oversight and how you think we can best go about putting in place an agency, an organization, a body that will ensure that what happened on January 1st doesn't happen again.
I think with putting in the civilian oversight, the information that I was questioning about is very important.
That's right.
Because the civilian oversight can look at that issue also and help make recommendations to improve the policing of BART.
I think we agree with you.
Okay, and so that's part of the reason why I'm asking those questions, because we as civilians also need to know that information for ourselves, and the Civilian Oversight Committee should know, you know, what has transpired to improve the policing of BART since the situation has occurred.
And we're in agreement, and I'm not trying to put you off or not be responsive. Your point of view about civilian oversight, that it would help ensure that the BART police are adequately trained, is a valid point of view. I share that point of view, which is one of the reasons why we're trying to move in that direction. But in order to get there, I think it's really important that we hear from the community, hear their opinions and point of view about the various models that exist, ensure that we do something that is meaningful, not only for the agency, but meaningful for the community. This is our first effort to try to do that, to hear from the community, and I certainly want to thank you for taking your time to come here and provide us with that information. But when you're through, it would be helpful if we could move on and hear from the community about specifically about civilian oversight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Sorry, Jesse, did you want to say anything about training?
First and foremost, what brought us here is a moral challenge. While there are systemic change that must occur, there's a moral base that's producing the change. I don't know if Ms. Johnson was finished.
No.
And I heard Mr. Keller ask if you were finished. So maybe I should just ask Ms. Johnson, were you done? Because I would not want to speak beyond her time, for were it not. We wouldn't be here today. One of the gentlemen, Mr. Gallman, I believe it was, made a statement that may be his mindset toward the issue, but it's a mindset that has to be changed. He said, we cannot change police culture. He said, we can impact it, but we can't change it. So while Ms. Johnson was asking the question over whether or not any immediate actions were taken in the training of BART officers after the shooting incident, it's because that if there is a moral impetus that's moving BART management and officers, then immediately we know that somebody should have done something immediately to address the behavior and the culture of the officers at BART. Now, I would add that the behavior and culture that has to be addressed does not only belong to the officers. It belongs to the management and the elected officials that govern the process. So changing culture isn't easy, but changing culture must occur, and we hope that this proceeding, the bringing on of Noble, and the openness of this conversation actually addresses a change of culture, not just of the police, but of BART and politics from top to bottom where this kind of issue is concerned. Now, laws change every day. Policies change every day. But I have to say that morals do not. Murder is immoral. And the racially biased policing that Mr. Gallman spoke of is more than likely what produced this murder. When an enforcement officer has the mindset that these young men that I'm looking at are less than I am or are less than human, then it becomes easier to go for a taser or a gun against a victim laying down or a suspect laying down prostrate on the ground. That is the manner that one would use to punish a pet or an animal, not to bring into custody a human being that have complied with every order. So now, as we're moving forward, the difficulty in moving forward is we're not clear in what happened in the open forum here with BART. So that we don't know, since the chief is not here, whether or not the investigation conducted by whatever internal departments that BART police had, which I don't think was much of any, whether or not the investigative findings were corrupt, whether or not they were contaminated, and whether or not they were compromised, so that the district attorney, even though he would bring his own investigators, surely he relied on something that BART officers wrote or reported from that platform. One of the men here spoke of the need for immediate interviews of every officer involved on the scene on that night? We don't know because we haven't gone to trial yet and it maybe hasn't come out in a public forum yet. How long it took to bring each of those officers to a point of interview? We don't know whether or not all of the officers have been interviewed. We do know that Johannes Meserle was not interviewed. Now, after those interviews were to have taken place, the chief and a member of his command staff sent a letter out to Bart Police seeking their material and emotional support for Johannes Meserle while he was at Santa Rita. So again, we don't know how valid was any investigation authorized by Chief G and those who authorized Chief G. To date, no officer nor commander has been disciplined in this homicide and murder of Oscar Grant.
That's right.
Not one. So we're concerned that whatever oversight or that should be chosen, that it has the authority. I heard someone say that in San Francisco, not only can the mayor fire the chief or an officer, but that the board can do this.
Right.